Hello and welcome to Back Chat, your podcast all about scoliosis, yoga and back care. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry. I'm a yoga teacher, creator of the Yoga Berry Yoga for Scoliosis community and YouTube channel, and this show is all about supporting you on your scoliosis journey. So if you're looking for practical advice and inspiration on how to manage the condition with yoga and movement, then you're in the right place. Hi, and welcome everyone. Welcome to Back Chat. I can see some of you waiting already. Oh, sorry, that is me doing a double up. Good. Yeah, welcome. Welcome today. I know this is a topic that is of interest for a lot of you. We're talking about kyphosis and scoliosis today. And I've got the lovely Sam Miller here from Posture Dojo, who is going to speak to us about this. Now, if you are here live, feel free to use the chat. So we will be able to see your comments. Obviously, don't do it if you're driving or if you're doing anything else. But if you've got any questions that you want to ask, feel free to ask them as we are live right now. Obviously, if you are watching the replay, we will get back to you as well, but it's not going to be as quickly, obviously. Good. So before I bring Sam on, I just wanted to mention, because I know some of you were a little bit confused, when is Back Chat happening? Because this used to be a weekly occurrence. It's not anymore, but this is happening every the first Thursday of the month, and I usually have guests to talk about specific topics. So if you've got something that you are particularly interested in learning more about, then feel free to let me know. And there's so many fabulous people, obviously, that we can speak to and that we can learn from. And this is really what this is obviously all about, that we learn from each other. Good. So let me bring up Sam. Here he is. Hi, Sam. Welcome. I think, yeah, there we go.
Hello. Nice to be here. Hello, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Dive into some and learn. I agree. This is all about learning. So let's share what we know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Sam, before we kind of dive into your journey, whereabouts are you right now?
I'm in Tulum, Mexico.
Right. Okay. And this is where you are based. This is where you live right now as well.
Yes. It's a beautiful part of Mexico. There's some very nice beaches, cenotes. I love being in water. I'm practicing some free diving, learning some breath holds, being in nature. I think that's a great kind of part of living here.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds amazing. Sounds really nice. Good. So let's get started then. I thought it would be nice just to talk about maybe your diagnosis and kind of when did you first know that you kind of that something was wrong with your posture and that you had to do something about it.
No, I grew up in Australia, and in my teenage years, like we're talking late 90s, I had the fortune of having a 56K modem and a dial-up, internet connection. And I got a glimpse of the outside world, but became very engrossed in that world. And I believe during those teenage years is really where I cemented in quite a technically a very severe kyphoscoliosis. It was officially diagnosed around 16. My mother was very open to alternative holistic treatments. So we kind of, dabbled around the local area, looking at different things. One masseuse did say, get some gymnastic rings. And I had that on my mind. And it was just like I didn't come across an accessible way of getting rings at that time, or like of having a place to do rings regularly. So I unfortunately missed that boat earlier on. But it was 18 when I started living by myself and went to an orthopedic surgeon, waited the 6 months to see the surgeon. And with an 85 degree curve, it was going to be quite a risky surgery. And because, I still had I was playing soccer. I still had movement. I wasn't in, I had aches and kind of setting pains, but I didn't have like, you know, life threatening issues at that time. So he said that I was not a candidate for surgery. And in that moment, it sunk in that I was going to be, you know, have this severe deformation for the rest of my life. And that hit me pretty hard. I remember that the emotion of going through that realization. And, you know, I walked out of that office without a plan and without power to do anything about it, because, you know, the system says that, you know, bracing or surgery, and that's really it. If you're lucky, you get a, you know, a scoliosis trained physio. At that time, we're talking 2001, early 2000s, it was, you know, there weren't, Schroth method was not as mainstream as it is now. So no one really kind of knew anything about it. So I just kind of lived with it until 33, when I started suffering the consequences of a severely compressed and collapsed structure. And I started chronic fatigue, constipation, acid reflux, inflamed belly. I was pale. Everything was shutting down in my system. And it took me 8 months to figure out that it was actually like a very tight and compressed midsection that was choking me from the inside out. And that was about 6 years ago. And that sent me on the journey that I'm currently on. I realized that, oh, it's my midsection that literally is choking me out, thanks to listening to David Goggins' book, who actually went through a similar issue. Found himself in hospital. He realized that, you know, a stretching guy in the military had told him he's got a bunch of stretching to do in his midsection. And I started doing that. And within days, I started at least being not choked, and I could actually generate energy and force and strength again. And after, you know, 6 months to a year, I realized, okay, I'm good now, but I'm not going to let that complacency. I'm not going to just kind of like go back to normal now. I'm going to continue. I'm going to see how far I can go with this. I'm going to see how much I can recover, how much I can transform my body. And I've actually recovered just shy of 2 inches of my height. I have great energy. I have a great outlook on life. I have, I'm starting to run now, so I'm a little bit sweaty right now. But you know, I've really, it was a process of starting from scratch, and I've had such great results. I've started sharing that online. Other people have been inspired and empowered by the story, and that's brings us to today, and just kind of on this mission to get the word out there that there is so much you can do.
Yeah.
You know, bracing and surgery is just one avenue, one option. There's so much more you can do. And there's things that you must do. And so I'm sure we'll dive into some of those as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to go back for a moment again, because obviously we speak about scoliosis all the time here on the channel. Obviously, we haven't really covered kyphosis so much. So I just wanted to clarify. So this, when you say an 85 degree curvature, you are talking about kyphosis, right? You're not talking about a sideward curvature.
Yeah, it's mostly kyphosis.
So there is, so you were kind of diagnosed with a scoliosis as well, or is it just a kyphosis? Well, just.
Yeah, so technically an 85 degree hyperkyphoscoliosis, which is a combination. I believe it's around 15 to 20 degrees of a scoliosis. Right. The T10 is a hemivertebrae, which is a wedge-shaped vertebrae, and most of it is that forward neck hyperkyphosis.
Mm-hmm. And so was this something, and I mean, you said this was diagnosed at 16 years, I think, first time. Was it something that you were kind of aware of, that you kind of, or your parents maybe noticed physically?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're a teenager and, you know, you're getting good at ignoring things, that's probably where it really started sinking in. You know, I was on the computer so much and I was just getting engrossed in these the online games, right? Because we're connected to the outside world and I was just really ignoring it and going forward. And then I think over those years, I realized that, okay, there's something kind of setting in here. And, you know, I believe the compromise happened through a combination of a continually sprained left ankle and a near drowning accident, which caused a pretty traumatic compression to try to free myself from a rope underwater. A combination of those things, I think, just created enough imbalance. And, you know, the Australian teenage ego is just, you know, tough it up and ignore it. And I think I had that perspective quite a bit. And just being sucked into the digital screens for 14 hours a day with a very poor posture, I think it just cemented in there through those formative years. It was really just a lack of paying attention to that voice very deep down, which was telling me, you know, there's something you're doing here, which it feels easier to you now, but it's going to cause you issues down the road. And I only recognize that voice now, but I do remember having that feeling as I was kind of setting in that formation.
And then it was really the wake up call was when you started to have more serious problems, obviously, wasn't it? Which were not just somebody telling you, "Oh, your posture is bad."
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I
yeah.
For 18 to 33, you know, I did things pretty normally. You know, I had done, yeah. There wasn't. I'd gotten into rings. I had done a bit of the rings, but I hadn't really dove deep into attempting to correct it. I'd just done it as, you know, I was doing a fairly standard gym routine. I was playing sports. I was active, been very active. I knew that movement is a thing, but some yoga, you know, but it certainly wasn't as, you know, immersed as I am now.
Mm-hmm. So what is, so you said you started to have kind of digestive problems and other problems. And then you discovered, what was the name again? The book that you read, David,
the book is called Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. So he was a, you know, an ultra marathoner. He was just, you know, all around just extreme adventure guy. And mm-hmm. he didn't stretch as much as he needed to. And he had quite a tight hip flexor in the end, which was also starting to choke him out. The psoas/hip flexors are located directly next to the intestine, the digestive system, as well as the lymphatic system. Mm-hmm. So with a severe curve and compression, there was clearly some pinging, some choking of the intestine and lymphatic system that was preventing me from digesting and choking out my immune system. Because the lymphatic system is that waste disposal system to cleanse out toxins, and that was being choked out as well. So, grave stuff. And unfortunately, you know, that's what it took for me to realize, well, okay, this is a severe structural compromise, and you can't just kind of like go on the way you are. It needs to become a priority. It was a giant kind of calling to go deeper into it.
Yeah. So tell us, take us kind of on this little journey then, that where you kind of explored kind of different methods and different modalities. What did you try?
Pretty much everything. Like I mean, you know, I grew up in a you know, with a Californian hippie mother from, you know, New Hampshire and California, and then in that part of Australia that I was, there was a lot of new age ideas. So, you know, I was in like temescals and womb rebirthing sessions and all those things growing up. So I got exposed to a lot of energetic things like that. And then on the more mainstream side, I've been getting into, you know, the primal movements. some of the functional patterns. But really, I guess it started by undoing the hip flexors for me. That was when I realized, wow, okay, you can have profound transformative effect on your body through targeted stretching and mobility. So it started out as stretching. Then I'm like, well, stretching isn't re-educating that muscle. And so now it's about re-educating a higher posture as opposed to just stretching out the old posture. So, you know, everything from cacao ceremonies and ecstatic dance and ayahuasca and holotropic breath work to the more, you know, psychological and mental aspects through the meditation, through calming the nervous system, through the myofascial network, which, by the way, just became officially diagnosed as the human's largest organ in the past 10 years. So the medical system I went through didn't even understand the fascia. And now as I'm approaching posture correction, I'm like, well, it's one of the most important things to understand, as it's literally the scaffolding and an extension of the brain and nervous system, which determines our posture. Our mental outlook on life is extremely, extremely intertwined. And this was also observed by Katharina Schroth, the physio in the 1920s from Germany, who pioneered the rotational angular breathing and the derotation of the rib cage in order to counter the rotation of scoliosis. She also observed that in order to help someone, the mental aspect must be addressed. They must be able to, she said, breathe a sigh of relief, to be empowered, to have hope, so that they can allow that inherent, that intrinsic healing and flourishing energy through their bodies. And her ultimate goal was to empower people. Mm-hmm. We look at it now as a lot like of breath and gymnastic, but her ultimate goal was to empower people. And I think that's a worthy mission that I'm also on, by drawing what has been effective through my own experience, drawing on all of them and putting them in a way that works and communicates, that people can understand. Because I think a lot of people are held back through over technical terms, and there's so much to learn that people can get lost and overwhelmed, and speaking in a language that we can understand is really important to help people, especially teenagers who you know, there's so much to take in. So it's been a process to learn how to teach, and that's the phase I'm on right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not easy.
Right.
So tell us a little bit more about, so did you kind of take some Schroth therapy sessions, or did you kind of dive into the big yellow book, or what was kind of your experience with the Schroth method?
Yeah, so I had done some online classes, and then I got the yellow book, and I got a house by the lake for 6 months, and I went through that book page by page, and it's very thick and it's very dry, I started kind of putting what I was learning into TikToks, and I think that opened up a lot of people's minds about, you know, the power to actually start pressurizing your inner cavities and creating alignment through your breath. That's how I got into her methods.
So what I remember from, because obviously, again, we mainly talk about scoliosis here, which is different, obviously, from kyphosis. But what I remember from the Schroth, from one of the Schroth therapists, was that kyphosis is all about opening the body laterally, whereas scoliosis, we want to open the front and the back, because we are too flat. And then with the kyphosis, it's kind of the other way. You're kind of too narrow, and you're trying to open out sideways, which is then going to kind of flatten that rib cage. Is that kind of what you feel as well, or is that too simple?
Yes. So with exclusively kyphosis, I would agree with that. And that lower back, back and sides breathing is often the part that's being neglected in the kyphosis. Usually we've got that distended belly and chest breathing. The way that I approach my spine with a slight bit of scoliosis, I am directing breaths into my concavity, going laterally to the side of the concavity first, and then towards the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. So you were talking about kind of, what did you call it? A collapse? Did you call it a collapse of the...
Of what? Of mine?
Of the front, kind of of the digestive system and everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's a collapse higher up, and how I kind of perceive it in my body, it was my internal brace was activated. I was internally bracing this imbalance, and that meant that my lower back and my hip flexors were extremely chronically overacted, and they were doing the work instead of the glutes and the more healthier kind of postural patterns that I'm activating nowadays. And I always realized that, you know, I always had kind of like weaker glutes, even weaker calves, because I just, the way that I was walking was kind of using like the hamstrings, tight, very tight hamstrings, you know, flat foot, tight hamstrings, and tight lower back. Whereas now I'm activating, when I'm walking, I'm bringing awareness to my toes, the glutes, and then obviously the upper mid thoracic.
So what is kind of like nowadays, what is kind of like your daily routine? What are the things that you do really on a daily basis?
I prioritize a session of movement. I prioritize movement opportunities. I travel quite a lot to a lot of different locations. So I often have different gyms. Sometimes I have no gym. Sometimes I have nature. Sometimes I have city. So whatever, wherever I am, I prioritize movement. I look for that movement opportunity. My daily routine is taking in sunlight and connecting with my breath. I'll often start connecting with my breath through that sigh and feeling into the collapse. I do think connecting back to that collapse is important. I think that's often skipped quite a bit because we're constantly trying. Like when we have this compromise, we're our compensations have formed to prevent further compromisation, but we rarely go back to that. Okay, well, let's let go of that too for just a moment and really like, let's go back to what that complete collapse looks like. Let's breathe from there. Let's learn from there. Let's observe from there. Let's find peace from there. Let's find strength from there. So I'll often start my breath work meditation from that place, rebuilding on top of a breath, setting attention for the day. And then it's what my body is calling for. So it's usually unraveling, aligning, or fortifying. I believe every day, one of those three, and sometimes all three of those things together. Some days I, you know, if I've been doing a lot of gym work through some exercises, I'm feeling tighter, I'm feeling good, but I'm feeling like, okay, I'm feeling some tightness. So I'll do an unraveling day. And that's where I might do some myofascial release through medicine balls, lacrosse balls. Maybe I'm doing some myofascial maneuvers like human garage style or some mobility work. Then maybe I'm doing alignment as well. So that might be those planks. Now, we know that we've talked before about the side planks and their effectiveness with kyphosis. The front plank is really important, especially the front plank activating the glutes, the lower abs, and the upper mid thoracic. In a front plank is very very important. So you know, it's either alignment, and then there's that fortification. And fortification for me is where I'm exposing weaknesses. I'm seeking out weaknesses. in my body. So if I'm hiking and I notice that on that, as I'm bringing my hips up or my knee up, I'm getting some restriction there, or maybe I'm taking a big step up and I feel weakness to push up on that. That's what I'll go into. You know, I'll take that information into the gym and I'll train that with box step ups and just look to of motion. So I'm basically just weeding out weakness. I'm fortifying an all terrain agility, which is my priority. I want to go kite surfing. I want to go snowboarding. I want to go swimming, free diving, you know, spearfishing. I live quite adventurously. I want a body that's ready for any of that. So that's what I optimize for when I fortify. So each day I'm usually just prioritizing a session of, you know, unraveling, aligning, or fortifying.
I love that. I love that. That for you, it seems like it's always been about being well and living well in your body. I haven't heard you talk about kind of, I wanted this to go away, or I want to have a straight spine or anything like that. It seems like, your attitude has always been more about being well in your body.
There's a great quote from that Katharina Schroth's Yellow Book, and it's do not waste time protesting fate. Do not waste your time and energy uselessly protesting fate. And so what is fate, and how much can we determine what it is? And you know, if something has happened, and if I have a wedge-shaped vertebrae, even though, you know, every year or 7 years we're completely new at a cellular level, I'm sure there are some modifications in bone, right? Bone is constantly reforming itself. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say that there's no change available there, but it is quite a compressed wedge-shaped vertebrae. So I have to accept my fate of building a structure with that in mind. And any thought or any idea that, you know, about what I can't do something about is wasted energy that I could be applying to what I can do, which is each day unravel, align, fortify. Like, those are the things I can do. So I mean, I have 100% energy towards that. What has been has been. What is what I decide to do right now. And although I could, you know, I don't have to really prioritize it as much. I'm doing it anyway because I'm playing the long game. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ready now for when I'm 70, 80, 90, because I know the more healthier patterns I cement in my mind and body now, I'm going to have a much more enjoyable quality of life then. So it's choosing the effort now to have more effortlessness in my posture down the road.
So for anyone who's listening right now and is maybe in that place where they're feeling hopeless, or where they're feeling this is probably just going to get worse, I might have to have surgery, I don't like the way I look, what would you say to them? What's kind of somewhere to start to get going on this journey?
That's a great question, and I think I can. There's a bunch of different ways to answer that. But if someone is thinking about that, it's probably a sign that they're not feeling like they can do anything about it. And so they're probably not doing something about it. And it does feel like work when you begin and you're doing these planks and it's like, whoa, this is uncomfortable. This is pain. This is work. This is effort. And I'm already low energy. Why am I doing this? And they don't see the results because it takes time to get these results. And so they're like, in the end, they don't believe that it will work anyway. And so that's a really, really kind of dangerous perspective to live in. So where I would begin with that person with that perspective, I would begin by researching into, I would say, the Schroth Method is such a great place to start just because there's so many testimonials, there's so many results that they've gotten over the years, and there's so many people who are doing their different variations. So go and get belief first. Go and understand that, wow, you can actually do that. And you're no different from those people. So I think believing that you can actually do something about it is important. And then you would say, okay, well, now you're going to have to do the work. And that work is, it does feel like work because it's a new habit and it's not part of who you are. And you're just kind of in this, maybe a more stagnant or a more ignorant place where you're like, I'm just trying to ignore it. But think about anyone who's having great quality of life. They have some type of exercise routine. They're either walking, they're eating healthy, so anyone, even without a compromised posture, is taking care of their body. So if you're going to have if you want a great life, then you have to have a great kind of movement or wellness routine, right? Anybody. So you can't use your, compromised posture as an excuse to avoid doing healthy activities. So understanding that that's part of a great quality of life is having a great wellness routine. And then just realizing that because your posture is compromised, it will require a specific group of skills and movements and exercises that you can learn that are your wellness routine. And doing those things are going to foster in you a strength, a resilience, a balance, and peace that few people are invited to develop and learn on their wellness journeys. So your journey will be a reward in itself as you begin to implement these specific things for your wellness journey. These characteristics that are built in your mind and your body are going to be gifts. And you're gonna have to take my word for it. But as soon as you start doing it and you start seeing that, the consistency that you develop as you kind of start doing these daily routines, the peace that the breath work brings you, the strength and the extra mobility, the less pains that you have, all of these are just more tangible results that you will collect as you get going. And that's probably the summary of the advice, and that would be to get going, start.
Yeah, I love that. So obviously yoga, you said it is now kind of a big part of what you do as well. Is there any kind of yoga advice for scoliosis for kyphosis, that where you say, this is a good one? Well, we talked about plank, obviously, already, which is kind of a general one. Is there something that you, where you're like, this is a really good pose or exercise for scoliosis?
Yeah, so when I mentioned... When I mentioned yoga, it was something that, in my discovery phase of, all these different modalities that I was doing and bringing together. I'd say I've cherry picked some aspects and elements of it, not specifically poses all the time, but also just that that yogic perspective of presence and flow in the body, and then also that the unraveling intention, which I believe yoga is very focused on. So the parts of yoga for me are in that unraveling phase of this process. And alignment, there are certainly some alignments, but depending on each person's posture. So for example, and this is where, like, for me to say to someone, go and do yoga, I would highly suggest to someone with like you, who is like yoga for scoliosis. If you go to a yoga class and you do all of their things without an awareness of what you're doing, you may be encouraging hyperlordosis when they tell you to do the cobra, and you're just kind of stretching and you're not activating the mid-thoracic, and you're just kind of doing things that probably, like, there are directions that you don't necessarily want to go in. And then I would also suggest balancing it with some functional strength as well. So with four specific things, the planks are amazing. I would say the hip hinge is not a traditional yoga, but I think, like, on a forward bend, you're kind of tapping into that, right? So a forward bend is often done in yoga, and you get into that state of traction. But again, I would recommend more of a hip hinge. It's probably my favorite one, especially for kyphosis.
Like a deadlift in the gym, for example.
I wouldn't recommend a deadlift. I think without weight, understanding, you know, you've got, with a slight bend in your knees, you can activate your glutes, brace your lower abdominals, and get that extension through the middle upper thoracic. Mm-hmm. Just without weights, I think that pose alone, and staying in that. And that's where, you know, going through a regular yoga class, you'll go through a forward bend and you'll do, you know, come up straight, fall down, go through. And it's a good audit of your flow, and it'll help you bring awareness. But in order to train for extra mobility, in order to train in that direction of getting more and more floppy, in my opinion, is not a complete plan. We're seeing that there's benefit to, instead of passive stretching, where we're just kind of going for the, you know, more and more extreme mobility pose, that it's more effective to restore healthy communication through the range of motion. Mm-hmm. And I find doing that in your own time is more effective than going through like a generic yoga class. So there's that. And then I like the tree pose, or like a flamingo. That's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, getting that unilateral balance.
Similar, it sounds like a similar approach to, we're looking for elongation of the whole spine, rather than going maybe into your default patterns. I'm working with someone, with a teenager at the moment, who's got hyperkyphosis, and her favorite thing to do is to hang out in a on her belly, with kind of just on her elbows, and dropping her head down, which is like completely in her. So she's in her lordosis, in her lower back, and then she's in her kyphosis, in her upper back. And she had been told, obviously, back bends are really good for kyphosis. And I was like, but that doesn't do anything for you.
There's a lot of things like that, because if you just do the cobra, and then you come down, it's like, it's very different to what I'm doing now, which is like activating that anterior chain and that posterior chain, right? So imagine hanging from the bar, And, you know, if you were to like kind of swing back and forth like a bow, and being able to hold yourself right there is really activating your posterior chain. And then you go forward, and then you're holding yourself in that like, you know, crescent moon pose, and then you're going back. You know, that activating those chains in strength for me is a let's say a more beneficial goal than just going for pure mobility and stretching in that region.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. But obviously it's beneficial to at least understand, okay, what happens when you're doing pose? Oh, I'm feeling that hyperlordotic thing. And so that's not something you want to try and do, right? You don't want to try and improve your cobra pose more as much as you can. Right. But it helps going into it and feeling and understanding where you're at and understanding how that hyperkyphosis is part of it. And then understanding, okay, where do you have that restriction? Where isn't that going up? And then taking that information into some functional movements, which is where I bring in the body weight and the calisthenics. You know, personally, I have, like, I've been working towards a muscle up for the past 5 years. And obviously, like, I've got a bit of an uphill battle to pull it off, more than an average kind of back, but I'm getting there. I've gotten a couple up, and those kind of things are the things that I'm working for, because to do that muscle up, it requires a lot of coordination. It requires like an activation of a lot of the muscles. And to me, that two-way communication and coordination is a beneficial kind of goal that I'm working towards, because I think having these poses or these movements to work towards help guide us.
Mm.
You know, because in yoga you have that, you're working for your different poses, right? So I think we can apply that same thing with some functional strength goals as well. A handstand, for example.
Yeah,
you actually made something about a handstand. What's your current thoughts on the handstand?
I mean, I've always loved being upside down.
There's so a lot of benefit to it. Some are saying like three minutes a day, right?
Well, and I think there is something about, you know, we were talking about, obviously, your outlook on life and the energy you bring to something, and fun, right, as well. So for me, I've always enjoyed kind of gymnastics, cartwheels, things like that, being upside down. I've always enjoyed that. And actually, when I then kind of started to do a little bit more of that in a yoga class, in a structured setting, I discovered that I actually felt, not anymore, but at that time, I felt more balanced being upside down than standing on my feet.
Interesting.
which is interesting, right? So just because obviously my main scoliosis is a lumbar scoliosis, so when you turn things upside down, the base is actually straighter now, and it almost felt better. So I do still enjoy handstands. I don't teach it in a yoga class now, because a lot of my clients are maybe in their 50s and 60s and might not want to do a handstand or have arthritis and things like that. But in my own practice, absolutely, I still think it's a good thing. And I think the whole upper body strengthening aspect is really, really important. And it's also something that I'm working on. So when I go to the gym, it's going to be a lot of upper body stuff that yeah. I need to obviously work on. And it always makes a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately the intention of awareness in any of these activities is going to be helpful. So whether you're doing the yoga or these, you know, body weight things or calisthenics or just workouts in the gym, or you're going for a more strenuous hike and you've got a lot of you know, full body movement there. Whatever you're doing, I think the most beneficial practice is awareness. If you're continually focused on awareness of your body throughout these movements, you're realizing, oh, when I do it like that, I'm affecting my spine that way, and I'm when I'm in that angle, I have less weakness, or on this side I have less strength, and so you have just this awareness is something that I believe will be your best guide throughout all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were mentioning before you started sharing some of the things that you have learned, obviously, on social media. What is kind of the best place where people can find you?
Yeah. I was doing some different hanging and some releasing activities, and because of this 85 degree curve, I was actually getting some, pretty instant height gains, because of, it's pretty much a xylophone going on, right? So I was able to kind of increase my height instantly, quite significantly. So I started making some TikToks about that, and I realized, wow, there are a lot of people out there who kind of are concerned about this, who want to kind of learn this stuff. So TikTok is really where I started. The TikTok account is called The Flow Wolf, one word. And you'll find that on YouTube as well, and Instagram as well.
Perfect. So you do have a YouTube channel as well.
Yes.
Where people might be able to find you as well. Yes, I saw you. You're big on TikTok, aren't you?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's really a attention casino out there, right? So there's a lot of people who you got to have some fun. I think TikTok's about having fun, and why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. What is the best way to get in touch with you, or to work with you? If people are like, well, I want to get serious about this. I'm sure this guy can help me. How can they work with you?
Sure. So on Instagram, you can send me a DM at The Flow Wolf, or you go to posturedojo.com, and there you'll get information about the online community and the 12-week protocol that I've put together by kind of cherry picking all these different things that I believe have the most effect for people. It's a 12-week protocol to unravel, align, and fortify really all of the steps. It's a gauntlet to go through that you pick up the skills, the perspectives, as well as the exercises to align and fortify your best posture. And that's a 12-week program with a community as well, so you have that support as well. So that's all on posturedojo.com, or you can just send a message on Instagram. It's probably the easiest way.
Yeah. And the type of exercises that people can expect, is it kind of we're going to be using weights, or do we need to go to the gym? What do we need to buy lots of things?
as a nomadic essentialist or minimalist, I've kept it as minimal as possible. In the first weeks, a medicine ball or a cross ball is required. From then on, either a resistance band, a pulley. I highly recommend some type of pull-up bar or gymnastic rings, or at least access to those things. But that's really it. The Swedish ladder is also recommended for sure. I really believe it's about investing in yourself and whatever space you have. Whenever I'm settling in one place for an area, I start accumulating different tools and different gear. Usually the gymnastic rings are always there. And then a gym. And I like gyms that are less machine-based and more open and functional to really get creative, right? Because it's not about I'd say specific exercises, because I think you can unravel your hip flexors so many different ways. So I think it's about having that variety of movement. And that's why, each day my goal is to, all right, what opportunity for movement is around me, what can be done, and let's work with that.
Brilliant. All right. Thank you so much. We're getting lots of thank yous here in the chat as well. I think people found that
amazing.
Interesting. So yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Of course. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Bye, everyone.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, I would be super grateful if you could leave me a 5-star rating and review, which will help me to create lots more amazing content. If you have any questions or suggestions, reach out to me on Instagram at yogaberry.scoliosis or visit my website at www.yogaberry.net.